I was one of those spoiled children that on his 16th birthday got a set of car keys. Great gift. But it was not just a gift, was it? It was a gift that came with a demand, came with a responsibility. Whether if it was spoken or unspoken, I knew that although I would call the car my car, it was not my car. And there are many things that I could have done to make that very clear, that it was not my car, and not my name on the title, and so on. The gift always comes with demand, with responsibility. This is true, I think we could say, in every aspect of life. It's also a great theme of the scriptures. And just take our scriptures of the day, for example, Elijah. Elijah is given a great gift. He is ready to cash it in. He's ready to die. But the Lord provides for him when he's at his limits, both physically and psychologically. He feeds him, gives him a gift of new life. But that gift comes with a demand. It comes with a responsibility. He must get up and he must move forward, walking towards Horeb, towards Mount Sinai, and the encounter with God. St. Paul, we heard today from his letter to the Ephesians, but I think we could speak more generally. His writings are full of this concept, gift and responsibility. In a general sense, say that's the structure of pretty much all of his letters. He speaks about the gift, and he speaks about the responsibility that comes with it. Often, his letters have these elements. One, he tells of the event of the death and resurrection of Jesus, and its meaning for us, for the world. There is an invitation to believe in Jesus as Lord, and so receive life from him. So that's the gift. But then, he says, if we receive him, if we wish to receive that life, we need to conform our lives to that of Jesus by loving as he loves and by avoiding sin. Right, all of his letters have this structure. The instruction about what Jesus has done for us and the instruction about how we are to live after receiving that great gift. Now, Jesus, the same dynamic is present in his ministry. Perhaps famously we could think of the woman caught in adultery, and the religious leaders are ready to stone her to death and want to trap Jesus. His gift to her is mercy. Mercy beyond telling. And he says, have none of them condemned you? Neither do I condemn you. But then immediately he says, go and sin no more. Tremendous, beautiful gift. Gift that she could not have expected or even hoped for. But the demand, the responsibility, is coupled together with it. So when we look at today's gospel, what is the gift? Well, the gift is the greatest gift. The gift of eternal life that is promised through the sacrifice of Jesus' own life, his flesh and blood. To his listeners, this gift, it seems impossible that Jesus could have possession of it and therefore offer it to them. So they're not going along with it, and they're not therefore going to consider what the demands are, even though they intuit what the demands might be. But what if, brothers and sisters, what if this gift is real? What if Jesus does truly possess life in itself? What if he can offer eternal life? Here's what Jesus' argument is, by the way. They're claiming that the manna was his greatest gift from heaven. But Jesus is saying, the manna doesn't reveal the Father to you. Because the Father is eternal. And the manna from heaven, those who ate it, they still died. Therefore, it's not the fullness of the revelation of the Father. Rather, he says, I give you the true bread from heaven, which reveals the Father, because whoever eats of it will not die, will possess eternal life. Well, what proof do you have of this, Jesus? This argument seems a little weak if he doesn't bring any proof. He's done miracles, but this is way beyond a miracle of multiplying some loaves of bread. The proof will not come now. The proof will come later. When after Jesus has ascended to the Father, even before that, when Jesus raises some from the dead, and then after he's ascended to the Father, the apostles and the believers in Jesus, in his name, will raise others from the dead. True life. You say, I don't believe those stories, maybe. Consider this proof. Many of those who believed in Jesus were delivered from the fear of death. Thousands upon thousands of them faced not only persecution, but execution. Death because of their faith. They were delivered from the fear of death because they knew what true life is. And they had caught the glimpse of eternal life that awaits them, having received the true bread from heaven. And of course, the greatest proof is the resurrection of Jesus himself from the dead, which was seen by numerous witnesses. Jesus is offering a gift like none other, a gift like no one else even dared to promise, a gift of eternal life. So the gift seems impossible to those who are listening to him, but it is real. Eat the bread of heaven and you will have eternal life. This is the gift that's being offered. And Jesus, and we'll get into this more as we continue on in John chapter 6, but this isn't a spiritualized thing. It gets very concrete. He said, the bread that I will give is my flesh for the life of the world. If you want this life, receive what is being offered, my own flesh. So that's the demand, isn't it? Which also seems impossible, to eat his flesh. Won't get it until we understand the Holy Eucharist. But the demand becomes possible, even though it seems impossible, if we live in him. And if we live by him, the gift of eternal life comes with its demand of living in him, living through him, living by faith in him. That's why he gives himself to us as food, so that we can live by his life, so that he can be our life. So friends, the gift and the demand. The gift and the demand are before us today. Come to the Lord with faith in what he has done, with faith in the gift that he offers, and come to him with faith and sincere intention to live as he demands, to live according to what he asks of us. When the gift and the demand meet, that is where we find truth. That is where we find goodness. That is where we find beauty. That is where we find true life.